This is Melissa. It is the 17th of November, 2024. I hope everyone is doing well, and if you're in a cold climate, that you are ready for winter. And I know some of you are in bitterly cold places in the wintertime, and I know what that is like. So I hope you have luck getting your wood in or whatever preparations you are making. The weather's been pretty nice here. I think it's going to turn cold on Wednesday, but Betty's feeling much better with her pacemaker, and that has given me a little extra time, and I've used it to be outside raking leaves and making a new flower bed, really for the spring, but I got it ready. So that is nice, and I will wait until the cold weather comes next week to finish my curtains. But all of this by way of saying that I haven't spent as much time glued to my computer as I usually do during the week, and that is a good thing for my health, physically and mentally, I think, to get away from it and just have some time to reflect on different things. Yesterday, we had a nice chat in the Telegram site that was led by Andrea and Fiona, and they just did a great job on Chapter 16, which was the New Age, the New Age. It was a very interesting chapter. They just did a great job, and Andrea does these amazing graphics, and I'm don't really think I'm going to have to do much of a video for this one because they had the great idea of doing a little bit of a screen share. So with Andrea's amazing graphics, it made it a very different feel from the other talks that we've done. It was nice. Next month, I'm going to be covering Chapter 17 with Rob, and I'm looking forward to that. We haven't set a date that we'll be recording. Chapters 18, 19, and 20 are open. I think there was someone in Telegram that expressed an interest in taking one, so that there are at least a couple of chapters available if someone wants to pitch in and do them. Without having a lot of time to look at news and what was out there and videos and all of that, I did have some time, though, outdoors to listen to Alan and pick a redux. So before we get to that, though, I just wanted to say that remember how Alan has always said, your heroes, your leaders are supplied. So we've watched one batch of heroes and leaders win, so-called win an election. And then what happened this week was all the cabinet appointments. And I wasn't glued to my desk, but I did see who the appointments were. And it's pretty clear the tone of people that Trump has chosen. It doesn't really look like America first to me. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this because I've already told you that, you know, so-and-so's wife has a Brahmin heritage, and the other half of Elon Musk's Doge is Brahmin parentage, and, you know, it's all, what does Doge mean? I'll let you look that one up yourself. And I said last week, and when I was talking about the pantheon of gods, that maybe RFK Jr. was the falconer. It's kind of funny because I did not, I promise you, go looking for falconer in a keyword search for a redux to put up this week. It was a complete coincidence that Alan just happened to mention the significance of the falconer and keeping falcons in this conversation that he had. So, your heroes and your leaders are supplied, and that includes the alternative. So, it's hardly an alternative or an alternative hero when you're being guided by these players in right back into the system. Vote. You know, Trump, 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 Trump for 8 years now. And this is so-called alternative. So remembering what Alan said repeatedly about how the CIA set up the what we think of as Patriot, now alternate truth or whatever, you know, medical freedom, because if you look at these players, you're going to see the same thing. So the CIA set them up years ago during the Cold War. Why would they relinquish control of that? And it's kind of farcical. You know, I keep my eye on it just a wee bit because I don't have time to listen to shows or very much of anything. I'm very selective in what I take in, but I am aware of goings on. And so when your alternate hero is pulled down and your alternate heroes are supplied, then who's pulling them down? Are they really being pulled down? Are we watching theater? All the world's a stage. I had the great idea for something to write today, the title, only the title. And the title was, "We're All Crisis Actors Now." Because when you participate in the simulation, then you have become both the crisis actor and the real victim. So you're both the real and the mock victim. In this talk, I may as well tell you that this is an interview that Alan Watt did with Chris Hinckley on the show called Road Warrior Radio. And Chris Hinckley was on Republic Broadcast Network, as Alan was at that time. Chris Hinckley still is. I don't listen to Chris Hinckley. I just went over to check and see, oh yes, he still is on RBN. But this was a good talk that they had. I really enjoyed it. And one of the reasons why I picked it is because Chris gave Alan the space to really go deeply into the past, and not just the more recent past, but all the way back. And I like it when Alan reminds us how old this system is. Alan, at one point, was talking with Chris, and he said, "We're totally socialized in the West now. Government bureaucracies are like cancers." Skipping just a little bit, he said, "Only our acceptance of what they do to us allows them to continue." And so they've basically turned the populace into children. And that's pretty much where we are. And there's a group, I don't want to get too deep into who the people are. They don't listen to Alan, but I've known them for years, and I was watching an exchange between them today, and there was a lot of excitement about the turnout, the results of the election, and who the cabinet appointments are. And they were making a comparison. They were showing RFK doing some pull-ups, all, you know, muscled up and his tight t-shirt and looking really fit at however, you know, pushing 70 or whatever age he is. In contrast to Rachel Levine, the current Secretary of Health or whatever, you know, in other words, RFK will have Rachel Levine's job. On the video, I'll supply that contrast if I can find it. So like I say, a lot of excitement, even though these people will give lip service to, well, they kind of know that it doesn't really make any difference, but they still vote and they're still excited. And at one point somebody said, "What is a Zionist?" And they were serious. And I just happen to know that that person can tell you all about Anunnaki. You see, So if you straddle that fence of saying, well, it may not be true, or we may not have that much of an effect, you know, because part of truly being all the way awake or fully conscious or however you want to express that means that you have to grow up, and you have to grow up quickly. And that means that you have to realize there aren't heroes. That's kind of the basic thing. That means that you're the adult for yourself. You're your own champion. So this interview was October 24, 2008. Chris Hinckley, like I said, I'm not that familiar. I mean, I knew him, that he had a show on RBN, but I've never listened to one of his shows, only the couple of interviews that he did with Alan. But he was very respectful of Alan, and it was a nice conversation. This was October 24, 2008, and he introduced Alan and said, yes, at that time, Alan had a show 3 nights a week on RBN. And I was thinking of the timing because it was literally 5 weeks later that John Stadmiller asked Alan if he wanted to go to 5 nights a week, and he did. So starting the 1st of December 2008, Alan went 5 nights a week on RBN. In the book club chat yesterday, we were talking about, well, I said there were some things that were proscribed from talking about publicly, and that was one of the reasons why Alan liked teaching people one-on-one or in small groups, because and ideally face-to-face. You can make eye contact, you can see body language, you can see when what you're saying makes someone uncomfortable. You can, you know, step back and assess what are they able to digest at this time. And that is what I meant when I said proscribed, not that we're actually forbidden necessarily. Well, publicly we may be censored, that's for sure. But we are proscribed because of what the listener is able to understand. And so I just return to this thing I've been, you know, kind of on about lately, is the hope that we are able in our process of coming into truth and understanding of this ancient agenda, we're able to let go of the idea that these heroes and leaders are real. Again, in this conversation, they were talking about, Chris was talking about the whole process of the election and the whole system. And Chris was saying that he was kind of having a back and forth with his wife about this. And she asked him, I guess, well, she was really lamenting the election process and the fraud of it. And he responded to her that in the two-party system, if the Communist Party candidate was elected by a landslide, then probably 95% of the people would say, oh, okay, well, I didn't know him, but, you know, somebody must have liked him. Maybe they liked him in the Midwest, you know, so let's give him a chance. And Alan responded, yes, again. He said, exactly. Again, Huxley said, you'll know what the people want because it's what everyone else wants. That's how they decide. What's everyone else doing? That's why opinion polls were thought up, the whole idea of them, by Tavistock. As well, because they found out that if they put out polls saying anything that they wanted to say and claiming that this percentage were for this and so much for that, the public would believe them. And they'd go with what seemed to be the majority opinion. That's how simple it is. And it's sad, but it really is that simple. It really is. And again, I say that the big, almost first step is acknowledging, being able to acknowledge to yourself that you were duped your whole life long. And that's a hard thing. But when you're reaching out, when you're trying to grab a hold of and see, well, if we can just change the system, if we can just make it better, if we can just get it back, if we can just get our guy in, that is living in childhood. And there is a good section here. I won't read the entire thing, and you're about to hear it for yourself. But Alan talked about the culture industry and Plato, etc. And he said, so nothing in our reality has truly evolved by itself. If anything, Plato said that anything that came from the grassroots would have to be eliminated at the beginning because it would be outside the control of the elite. So we live in an age where we take everything for granted, but in fact, it's a pre-planned, manufactured reality we live in. And it's full of deception. It's run by stealth and very clever people who are taught these sciences at all levels. And I think that this really is a key thing. It's almost like level one. It is a complete fiction. And when you break through that, then you are able to see so much more. And I have to say that it can be, I know from my experience that it is ongoing. It's a continuing process of seeing and seeing and seeing more. But the very first place that you have to arrive at is the willingness to accept that you were duped. There was a caller to the program, Melinda, and she said to Alan, I just want to tell you that I've been listening to you for the last couple of months, and you made my brain hurt, and it should be hurting. I mean it, really. There's so much information there, and I fall down the rabbit hole, and you make me stay down there for a while, and I don't remember hearing anyone that made me think so much, and I just want to thank you. When I look to see the so-called fallen heroes and, you know, the literal satire publications involved in the presentation of this particular latest part of the saga, that's it. We are all crisis actors now. And that means that you've willingly shown up and put on the fake blood. You willingly have shown up to what you know is a simulation. And you are pretending to be a victim. I know it is scary when everyone around you wants to talk politics, and that makes it seem like it must be real, right? Because they're all talking about it. That was another one from Alan, though. It's like, even if you are the only one who believes what you believe, that does not make you wrong. Accepting what is coming into sanity. And leaving, you know, the insane chaos generated by now really the internet. And there's one other thing that just a random thought that crossed my mind today in terms of information. I was flipping through Alan's Cutting Through books this afternoon, and he talked about how old humanity is. And he said, at least 190,000 years old. You know, believe that or don't believe that. But one thing that I know about Alan is that as much time as he spent on the computer, once that became the necessary component with which to upload shows, etc., and it bound him to researching in that way, most everything that he had gathered along the way, he got from those dusty old books. So the internet is the most curated reality / non-reality that is available to us now. So sometimes people will come to me with, you know, some, you know, fantastical thing that they have discovered online. And I just think, you know, who put that there? One antidote to being conned into thinking that anything that you need to know is on the internet, one antidote is simply backing away for a while and going into your own thoughts. And don't be afraid. Don't look for confirmation out there. What I'm saying is that we may not all have access to the major university libraries that Alan took advantage of in his younger years, or even just the dumpster diving for library weeding that he did over the course of his life. But nor do we have the time anymore. I mean, Alan said 20 years ago, time is precious. It is running out, and we have less of it now in terms of where we are in this agenda than we did then. But that truth can be accessed when you're willing to shut down the non-reality that is given to us on the internet and, of course, all mainstream news and television, etc. So, listen, I will leave you with this talk, this conversation. It is 2 hours, but really it was not 2 hours because an RBN hour is 45 minutes, and I took the liberty of going into the audio and cutting out pretty much all of the bumper music and a few other little things that were more time-consuming than helpful to the flow of the conversation. So enjoy this and have a good week. Thank you.
Welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Thursday, October 23rd, 2008, or Friday, October 24th, 2008, depending on where you are. And I have a very exciting guest on the way this evening. And so I'm looking forward to that. And that is, I think we're going to have some fun. I think that it's going to be a really interesting show. I think you'll really enjoy it, as I know I will. If you listen to this show, chances are you are familiar with my guest this evening, and you're going to want to hear what he has to say and not hear me prattle on all evening. So my guest this evening, of course, is Alan Watt, the host of Cutting Through the Matrix on this network, the Republic Broadcasting Network, 3 days a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 7 to 8 Central. And if you are familiar at all with his work, you know that his research is legendary, and he's a person who I would say is a national treasure. The information that is just massive, and it spans the expanse of recorded history, rolls off of his tongue like it's second nature, and he makes it sound so easy. It's wonderful, but he's been at it a long time, and this is most recent life, I guess you could say, because he did have another life, I suppose you could say, in a manner of speaking. But as I said, without further ado, I welcome Alan Watt on the show. Alan, thanks once again for coming on the show.
It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
I suppose a good place to start might be, you know, what we were just talking about, and I said, thank you for allowing me to steal some time away. And you said that that's all we really have left at this point, and not so much of that. Should we keep that in the bag for a little bit, or do you want to kind of lead off with that and expound on that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think people today, an average person too, who hasn't really been aware of the big machinations of the world and what's really going on with psychopolitics and the directions that society are being led into and led through and led towards, even they are feeling that there's something very, very wrong all around them. And it's their ability for preservation that's kicking in. They realize that there are so many big pushes into their personal life, into their children's lives, into the national life and international life, that isn't coming from them. They aren't pushing for anything themselves, but they realize that they're big, powerful organizations. The average person gets them confused with governmental bodies, but they're not really governmental bodies. They're private organizations and foundations that control thousands of other non-governmental organizations, which are pushing us all towards a set agenda in the world. And this present economic crisis was no surprise to me, because when you look back at the histories of economics and who runs the economic system, now you're into dangerous territory. It isn't just big bankers like the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds are given protection by aristocracies that have already existed before the Rothschilds even came in through Europe as bankers. You'd understand that before we heard of MI5, MI6, CIA, or the OSS, there were already organizations which worked for the British royalty and other agencies throughout Europe, and they had many different names. One of them was the Secret Service in Britain, still exists today. It's higher than the other organizations, and they've been running Britain, for instance, for hundreds of years on behalf of those who already hold power. And we find, for instance, that in the 17 and 1800s, top economists that were employed by these big royal type or royal chartered organizations, top economists like Malthus came forward and put out his theory on basically depopulation, the need for drastic depopulation of the public. And he elaborated and said that we will end this industrial era, it won't go on forever, and we'll have all these excess, useless eaters, basically. And he devised ways of trying to cull off the population, even down to putting them into the poorhouses. And they'd have people on the floor in the poorhouses. They measured the distance between them to see how far. They knew how far, for instance, that lice would crawl from one person to the next and carry typhus and various other diseases. This was a science that was already understood. Now, when we follow that down through, we find the same big organizations that had global ambitions, again, centered primarily in Germany and London, or the Germanic provinces at the time, they wanted a world war to unite the whole of Europe. We find that other agents that came out to get the working class working towards this as well. You always use the willing fools. And we find that Karl Marx was brought over to London to write his Communist Manifesto. And it's even debatable if he wrote it all himself, because his name didn't appear on the first couple of issues of it. But we find, as I say, that they use all sides, the dialectical process of conflict, to bring out basically compromise or treaty. There's no such thing, you see, as holding on to your opinion with these boys. They want you in opposition so that someone will come forward and compromise with them. And then they go on to the next part. And that is the classic thesis, antithesis, and synthesis technique that even communism uses, because communism was set up by the West. There's lots of documentation. Even H.G. Wells, who was all for the creation of the Soviet Union, went over to visit, and he said he was all for the fact that the UK, big bankers and the bankers in the U.S., New York, were funding it all. He thought it was just wonderful. So we know that the opposition to capitalism was set up by the capitalists themselves at the top, at least the group who ran capitalism.
Exactly. I usually say that when we talk about the Hegelian dialectic, it's interesting, you know, how much they tell us these things, and yet they still kind of mislead us. I usually like to think of it as everyone refers to it as problem reaction solution. I think it should be called solution problem reaction, because of course we know that they introduce, well, they know what they're preordained solution is, and then they go about creating a problem that will cause a reaction.
Bring
to
them
allow
to it, that's right. In other words, exactly. What you do is you look at the chessboard, and you know where you want to go, and you must get your player, your opposition, to make the move you want them to make. It's as simple as that. But however, if you look into the whole theory of the dialectic, you see once you arrive at the conclusion or the synthesis, you must that will in turn create a new thesis, which you start on.
Right.
So it's a never-ending story towards what they call progress. Now, progress is never defined by the ordinary people. But all the top boys will mention this term progress, which means they have a plan in mind. We have to realize this.
Brings to mind Fabius the turtle, two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back.
That's right. And of course, this is how the world is played. But today, with a massive socialization of all Western countries, we're totally socialized, and the government bureaucracies are like cancers. They sprout up and grow and suck from us, and then they end up bossing us around. And now all of these institutions, including government, remember, are supposed to be there on our sufferance. In other words, we are supposed to decide what they do for us. And within a short space of time, mainly between World War II and the present, they've helped us all forget that. And now we think that there is some kind of natural authority. Only our acceptance of what they do to us allows them to continue. And so they've basically turned the populace into children. That was the technique that Bertrand Russell and many of the big players working for the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which is a branch of the Secret Service, said they would do. They would encourage egocentric behavior so that the adults would never become truly mature. They'd go out to play forever, and government was taking over the role as the father.
I was encouraged earlier this year, to start reading Arnold J. Toynbee, who, of course, I refer to as the gatekeeper of knowledge back from about 25 to 55. And you mentioned the science. It's shocking and frightening when you start reading, as you point out all the time, what these people have written and how absolutely precise the science is at this point, as you point out all the time. And as a good example of what you just mentioned about how, you know, the fraud is perpetrated before us and because we allow it, I've mentioned a few times that during the AIG bailout hearings by the House Oversight Committee, Chairman Waxman in the second panel of that hearing had the two crooks, the two former CEOs in front of him. In the first minute, he introduces them by saying, "We're pleased to welcome both of you to the hearing. We're pleased to welcome the criminals," but then he swears them in, and immediately after swearing them in, he says, "Before we even begin, I'd like the police officer in charge to take the person who's holding up the sign and let's get that out, cleared out before, you know, cleared out of the room right now."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
All right, welcome back once again to Road Warrior Radio, and my guest this evening or this morning, of course, Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix on the Republic Broadcasting Network, 3 evenings a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 7 to 8 Central. And before we went out, I don't know if I got cut off, but just in case, to kind of tag on to what you were saying, I was mentioning, you know, the way that this fraud is perpetrated before us, and because we allow it, you know, Chairman Waxman swearing in the two former CEOs of AIG saying that, you know, we're pleased to welcome both of you to the hearing. And then the lady that supposedly, this was the point really, that supposedly Waxman and Congress work for, his employer, you know, she's standing at the back of the room looking for justice, and he says, before we even begin, I'd like the police officer in charge to take the person who's holding up the sign, and let's get that cleared out of the room right now. You got to be kidding me.
Yes. You see these characters are so cocksure of themselves now.
Yes.
And so arrogant that they rule us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not employed by us. They believe they're rulers. And they're acting like kings and queens and the court jesters used to do in times gone by. Mm-hmm. And as long as we accept that new impression, it's all perception, you see, how you're mm-hmm. taught to perceive things, then you will act like a child who's been taught to obey the parent. And mm-hmm. that's the technique they're using on the public from every part of government today. They're now enforcement agencies, for instance, whereas before they were basically peacekeeping services. We look all around us, and everything is enforcement from the government all the way down. Every government department and even the bureaucracies are into enforcement, including the housing departments and so on. They don't come and go with the public anymore. They dictate policy and tell you what to get done or else. And that's how it's being done. So these agencies within government are really, you got to understand, there's a parallel government existing within the United States. It's separate and yet within it at the same time. And one of the main organizations is all through the U.S., from federal to even to local level in some places, is the Council on Foreign Relations, which is just the branch, the American branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, a private organization that works for the high elite. And you have all the top aristocracy of Europe in it. You have all the media barons in it and TV media barons. This is pretty well sewn up. They have people on top of your educational system. They're all members of it. Everybody's on board with the same agenda. And you'll find Rhodes Scholars all through your bureaucracy. I think there's 200 federal employees within your bureaucracy in the U.S. that are Rhodes Scholars for world government. Here they are working inside your government for world government. And it's not simply a matter of let's all be friends, shake hands, and share our apples and oranges. It's a matter of a planned future society that's meant to serve them. And that's the word they use throughout their writings from the CFR. They're bringing in a world of service. You would be born to serve the world state. And I don't think people realize how serious this is.
I agree. And, I've mentioned recently, as I know you have, obviously, Gardner's Hard Road to World Order back in 74, from the Foreign Affairs. And, him mentioning that, you know, it would be the way that they were going to do it was to make it seem chaotic, basically. And then, you know, now we're to the point where he said basically it would be brought back together. All of these pieces would seem to be formed in a disjunctive sort of a fashion and then to be reassembled. And we see that happening now in every facet, in every way.
Every facet. I mean, you think of all the present crises that are happening at the same time. You see, that's impossible unless it's planned that way.
Yeah.
The economic crisis, you have crisis with employment. Well, they knew that was coming when they signed the GATT Treaty and put all the factories in China. These guys don't make mistakes at the top. But you're right, and the theory of chaos is ordo ab chaos. And so you must create the chaos, what appears to be chaos to the public. And as you say, then you reassemble the bricks at the other side into this marvelous new building, the new society. And that's what they're doing. Bush Sr. said it in so many lectures. The first one was on September the 11th, 1990. They loved that date. And he said the New World Order is coming into view. And then he repeats it 1 year later on September the 11th in 91, the same thing. And of course, not one media person asked him what he meant by this New World Order coming into view. Well, you find the answer from Gorbachev, because Gorbachev gave a speech recently at one of the big world meetings, and he was rather ticked off the U.S. was not fulfilling its obligation to become a new American empire for this century, because the U.S.'s job was to bring in this compromised Soviet capitalist system, this new system, worldwide.
Right, we're going to have to carry on that thought right on the other side of the break.
Yes.
Stick around. We'll be right back with my guest, Alan Watt. We'll be right back. Welcome back once again to Road Warrior Radio with my guest, Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix on the Republic Broadcasting Network, 3 days a week, as I said, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 7 to 8 Central. Alan has, man, we benefit in so many ways, has basically, in my words, dedicated his life. You know, this research is his life's work, and like I said, it flows from him like it's second nature. He makes it sound so easy, and yet it's a compendium of information that is, you know, I would say would take several lifetimes put together. It's an honor and a pleasure to have him on the show. You can learn more if you want to find out more about, you can listen to his shows. Obviously you can go to republicbroadcasting.org, and in the archives you'll find his show, links to each one of his shows, but you can also go to his website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com. RBN also has your website, or your email address, so if folks want to get in touch with you, is it okay if we put that out too?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Alan Watt, cuttingthrough@yahoo.com?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, as I was saying, it is a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show, and you're mentioning Gorbachev, and I know that you have mentioned that before. You talked about it yesterday, for example. And before I forget, though, for those who don't know you or maybe aren't familiar with your background and that you came from the music industry,
yeah,
which always, at least for me and probably, you know, for you and some others, brings to mind Tavistock,
mm-hmm.
The mainstream music industry, and whenever I think Tavistock, I immediately think of a quote by John Lennon when he said, "Our society is run by insane people for insane objectives. I think we're being run by maniacs for maniacal ends, and I think I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that." That's what's insane about it.
Yeah, that's true. And you see, it's all culture control. People think whatever culture that they're born into is quite natural, because it exists, simply because it exists, and they don't realize that culture has always been guided by those at the top. And that goes for even what you think is rebellious culture, such as music and so on. That was all done for specific purposes, to target the young and to separate them from the older generations. They talked about this openly at the time, even in mainstream media, that this new, the pop or rock culture, when it came out, would literally create a new type of human with brand new values, and the older types with contaminated, obsolete values would simply die off, and the new ones would come through. Of course, the young ones never realized their new values had been already written for them too, in order so that they could never really bond, have families of their own, and their lives would be pretty disastrous. All according to a plan, once again, for partial depopulation, but mainly because the family unit and the real communities that surrounded the families, because we're all families at one time, were too close to the tribal societies where they'd stand up for each other. And that caused problems when government wants total control over the individual. To get the individual, you must separate them from everyone else. And that's what they've been very successful in doing. Plato talked about this science in his book called The Republic, and how even in his day he said that certain arts should be licensed, like music, because with the proper use it could make the young rebel when required, and therefore they should be licensed because of the tremendous power it had over them. But drama and the visual arts and all the rest of it was well understood, and plays were actually vetted by the elite to see if they'd have the right effect on the public before they were shown. So you understand that all incoming information, especially in fiction, anything you enjoy, it probably has a more profound effect on you than anything you'll read in non-fiction. And therefore, certain facts can be attached to stories or dramas coupled with emotion, which embed themselves in your brain and then affect your personality. You will emulate what you see. And Plato even talked about the fashion industry that they also used in the drama shows to show off the latest fashions, knowing the public would emulate them. This is all well understood. So nothing in our reality is truly has truly evolved by itself. If anything, Plato said that anything that came from the grassroots would have to be eliminated at the beginning because it would be outside the control of the elite. So we live in an age where we take everything for granted, but in fact, it's a pre-planned, manufactured reality we live in. And it's full of deception. It's run by stealth and very clever people who are taught these sciences.
You can actually find in the documentation from places like Rand, especially the absolute science. I mean, it's a scientific. They have it down to a logarithmic equation.
Yes.
What you're talking about, where basically, if you, I can't remember the name of the report. I could probably grab it real quick, but where they have a dot cluster, for example, mm-hmm. and if you say and do things at a grassroots level that cause a certain response, that as you mentioned Huxley, for example, and the way that he said that there are those 20% of highly suggestible people and a demagogue that might stir them up, could organize them. If you're a person that can cause that to happen, and you based on the logarithms could cause that, you fall within the dot cluster, well, you have to be eliminated.
Yeah, Mao Zedong said something similar. He said he was not afraid of massive armies or weaponry. He was more afraid of a big idea that would come from some unexpected source and spread like wildfire across the world. And that is true. We find the same thing with Lord Bertrand Russell, who stated that they would have to catch these very young, intelligent ones with leadership qualities at school, try to bring them on board working on behalf of the elite, leaving their families behind, he said, and if they would not do that, they'd have to be disposed of.
I'm nobody. I wouldn't consider myself somebody who's on the radar, but I have actually seen that in dealings with certain people that I know are basically in the employ of those folks. I've watched them squirm and wriggle, so to speak, because they know that there's a difference between us, shall I say? I mean, I'm not...
Yep.
I know what they know, but not because I was spoon-fed it. And mm-hmm. so there's a creative force and some work that went into it that they don't have, and they're fearful of it. Just like you said, you know, about how Mao Zedong said that. The report I was talking about is Rand Arroyo Research technical report. It's titled Allocation of Forces, Fires, and Effects Using Genetic Algorithms. Mm-hmm. And what in the world is a genetic algorithm?
That's right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, but well, the thing is, Rand Corporation, he's another private organization that literally ran the public society and culture on behalf of the U.S. government all throughout the Cold War. And they based the whole Cold War strategy, supposedly, on game theory.
Yep.
And game theory was truly the idea of a mathematician who was also a paranoid schizophrenic. They made the movie about him, A Beautiful Mind, I think they called it. A total made-up jest of the real man. The real man was a horrible character. But this is what they based their game theory on. And they did all of these surveys on society using the computers during the Cold War. And they came to the conclusion that we as individuals had no real human qualities. We were simply automatons that like to eat and drink and be merry. We're egocentric, and therefore, if they kept us in that kind of state, we would leave the bigger things of how we were managed to the government. And to an extent, they were right, because they did encourage the egocentric behavior, narcissism. Narcissism is very, very good when you want to have people live their lives, a whole generation, without thinking of what's really going on outside of their immediate circle. And so they were running rampant through that whole 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s era with their foundations, with their non-governmental organizations, and now they're basically dictating public policy and handing it over to government. They're training government officials, in fact, and having their private, their public policy. So we don't have democracy in any way, shape, or form. Even in the countries that are supposedly democratic, like Canada, it's never existed. We've always been run by these higher societies, very secretive at the top, more publicly known on the way down. But even the ones like the Council on Foreign Relations, they do publish their own findings often to the public through their own magazine, but they don't tell you all of the truth. I have their old right. books from the 1930s where they go through the whole strategy century by century, including the setting up of China in the 1930s. They said that after the war and eventually towards the end of the millennium, they would make China, they'd build them up to possibly be the manufacturer for the planet. So we truly, everything is worked out before we're even born. And it's implemented through these non-governmental organizations, these big, incredibly well-funded foundations, which are backed by the old, old European aristocracy to the hilt.
Yeah, yeah. And like you've pointed out, you know, I think it was Bertrand Russell who said the reason that the old oligarchy or the old dictatorship was not perpetual was because they weren't able to offer enough bread and circuses, and now they weren't going to have that problem anymore because obviously, as you've mentioned, which is another thing we should get into, that the TV, now they have that, the greatest propaganda tool ever devised, as you have said, where they can literally hypnotize people and make them do what they want without them even knowing it. And now, of course, you know, the printing of endless fiat, those two together, endless bread and circus. And, you know, it was interesting. A guy said to me recently, we were talking about what's going on, and he said, it's bad, but, you know, it's not bad enough to where people are going to figure it out. You know, the Simpsons are still on. And I said, no. What you don't understand is they're going to keep the Simpsons on, and there will be 5 or 10 more because that's part of the bread and circus.
That is right. Bread and circuses are done through television mainly and through all entertainment, in fact. That's all it is bread and circuses. And most people spend so much time in front of that television, their whole, what they think is reality, comes from it. They've been trained even not to question the main newscasters that come on. And there's even retired mainstream newscasters up on YouTube belonging to the World Federalist Association talking about their world plans and how they've always been part of it. These are mainstream characters. You know. So everyone you see has a role to play. Anyone who has the ability to get into your mind or put suggestions into your mind has a big role to play in conditioning you. We are all truly being conditioned each time you switch the television on. And even through all the entertainment, including the comedies, there are suggestions and political correctness creeps into it, and the little buzzwords and catchphrases comes through it, and you start to repeat them too. It's monkey see, monkey do. Very old technique, works very, very well. And meanwhile, too, the flicker rate in the old version television was synchronized to match alpha waves in the brain, the human brain. And you couldn't really see it when it was functioning properly. But if you used the old video cameras with tape and taped them, you would see the flicker. It's the same thing you'll see with a computer. It's a built-in flicker rate. That's not there by accident. They could have picked any other type of frequency rate, but they picked the one that affects the alpha state of the brain, which puts you into a hypnotic state. And this is perfectly well understood amongst the scientists and those at the top and those who design them. But with the new high-definition television, it's even more enthralling because it alters the visual cortex in so many ways and gives you perceptions you wouldn't see before. It literally hypnotizes you into a more drugged state. And that's what they want. That's why it was mandatory. How come a government could come out and demand that every company that broadcasts must go high definition? I mean, isn't that supposed to be free enterprise? When government says it's by law, then there's a different agenda at work here. And it truly is an amazing tool. I've watched children with their jaws hanging open watching cartoons. Cartoons which have all the politically correct and viral speak in it, all through it. And if the parents talk to their children, the children will ignore them. They don't even hear them. So that's the effect of television and what it does to us. So it's getting worse and worse and worse. And more technical, too. There are far more scientific characters working above producers and with producers now, too. Psychologists as well, and even psychiatrists and behavioral specialists working to make even your little comedy shows that you see all to program you.
Yeah. Unbelievable. And for folks that might wonder, you know, I was mentioning, we're just about to go into a break. I might have to wait on this or come back to it. But I mentioned to you, I never take notes on people's shows. I listen intently to a lot of information, but I actually took notes on your show on the 15th of February this year. And this is one of the things you were talking about, the fact that TV is hypnotic, it's designed to match brain waves, that cartoons indoctrinate. You mentioned the sound bites, the flashing frames, and that they target all age audiences that they're specifically targeted.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, I mean, you start to read their writings, and it's shocking how scientific and, like you said, how there are, you know, billions upon billions of dollars that are poured into more and more research to even refine what is complete overkill, you know, the science of it in hyperdrive. But
yes,
yeah.
It truly is.
Never stop.
And we buy it. We buy all the tools that help to enslave us. And we enjoy it. Yep.
Unbelievable. Well, folks, stick around. We'll be right back with more from my guest, Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Welcome back to the final segment of the first hour with my guest, Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix on the Republic Broadcasting Network, 3 evenings a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 7 to 8 Central. And during the break, I was mentioning that there was a young lady that called me today, was asking about this letter that she received from the Rhodes Foundation, was asking if I knew anything. And of course, you know, as I was saying, I mentioned, you know, it's probably what they're offering is similar probably to the Rhodes Scholarship. You know, they'll offer you money and you'll get the best education, but then you'll be their puppet. You'll parrot their rhetoric. And what was interesting is that she's someone who knows a little bit about what's going on. She knows quite a bit, actually. And she said, we were talking about it, and she's, you know, we were talking about some other things, and she said, this is crazy what's going on, because I said, this is really what sparked it. I said, based on what's going on in the legislation that's just been passed, mark my words, probably within 3 years, I would say much, much sooner than that, bread's probably going to be $100 a loaf. And she went, oh my God. And I said, that's just what they do. I mean, look at the historical record. And she said, well, is there a chance that someone will expose what's going on? And I said, it's been done 100,000 times. And then I started mentioning all of their documents that they publish. I said, RAND, the Beginner's Guide to Nation Building. And I said, look, here's another document from RAND that talks about After Saddam is the title of it, Pre-War Planning in Iraq. After Saddam, Pre-War Planning? I mean, this is before a war, and this is planning for after Saddam, all before there's even a war that was not even declared by Congress.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, there's plenty to arrest people already,
mm-hmm.
right?
There's plenty to arrest them, but of course it can't happen because they're above laws that affect ordinary people. And that's the key to it, you see. These are elitist groups which are given really above board carte blanche powers to rule society on behalf of their masters. That's the key to it. They do have masters, all these big think tanks. And we have to go back to Britain, because Britain had societies as far back as the 1500s that truly caused, they fomented wars across the world even in those days, and they worked on behalf of royalty and the hundreds of royal families and cousins and so on that are attached to it, the aristocracy. In other words, they eventually called themselves Rosicrucians at the time of Francis Drake and Walter Raleigh. They were all pirates too. They were allowed to plunder gold from other countries and put it in the coffers of the Queen. This eventually merged into a society that was called the Royal Society. The Royal Society, Francis Bacon and later Isaac Newton joined, and they are the world's, today, the world's most prestigious science club you can possibly be asked into. It's royally chartered. You cannot use the name royal unless the royal family charter you and give you permission to use it on their behalf. And every top scientist that runs the world in all of the expert areas, including that of the mind, belong to the Royal Society. And that, in turn, is a branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which came out of the Cecil Rhodes Foundation. Very important organization.
Stick around, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the second hour. And, of course, joined once again by Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix. And, you know, I say on this program fairly regularly, and it's not a statement made rhetorically or in hyperbole, either one. It's true. Far too many people continue to show up to the chess match ready to play checkers. So if you are tired of getting checkmated when you think you're playing checkers, you definitely want to listen to Alan, and I would suggest going back through the archives many, many times. And speaking of that, I was saying during the break that since the last segment was short, I wouldn't mind if you went back over that, what you were just saying. I mean, the history, like I said, that 60 seconds worth of soundbite was probably 6 months worth of research for most people.
Yeah, it's astonishing to go back and realize that the medieval times were nothing like as portrayed in Hollywood. There wasn't a merry old king who just loved his subjects. It was far, far more gross than that, because with the same types of cunningness, the Machiavellianism going on with those who already held power. And the Knights Templars, for instance, never went away. They were given pretty well immunity in England, but definitely in Scotland. And even the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who was the treasurer for Britain, for the government, is called the Chancellor of the Exchequer. And you'll find the actual H-shaped checkerboard in Temple Square in London. That's where the Knights Templars worked out their profits and loss and all the loans they gave out on a chessboard, basically in the outdoors, using big poles to push the big chess pieces. And so they never went away, but in the 1500s, in the time of Queen Elizabeth I, we find massive changes happening in history, lots being written at the time, and a push towards science. Suddenly it broke out everywhere. Bacon was into it big time, the scientific research. We find that with, say, John Dee around Queen Elizabeth I as well. He was also a spy for Queen Elizabeth I, and his name was 007, or his number was 007, in his correspondence to the Queen. We had Francis Drake, Walter Raleigh, all the big adventurers and pirates and buccaneers that brought home the booty of their thievery to fill the coffers of the Queen. So at the same time, mind you, they set up the British East India Company, an international corporation that had all the status of an international corporation in that day.
Yeah.
And they, they ran it basically through a secret society that at the time was called the Rosicrucian Society. It was international, and it was already in France and a few other countries by the time it was mentioned in England. And the tops of all these big corporations, explorers and so on, all were members of the Rosicrucian Society. That
wow.
became Freemasonry in the 1700s, and at the
we're
head of Freemasonry...
To a break. I didn't even expect
royalty
that.
Again. Yeah.
We'll have to come back to that on the other side of the break. I'm riveted. I'm sure that you are too. Stick around. We'll be right back. My guest, Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Go check out his show if you haven't. I'm sure if you listen to this show, you probably listen to Alan's show. And it's fantastic. As I said earlier, I do not take notes on shows, but I have taken notes on Alan's shows. And there was one, as I said, back in February that was just so captivating. I had to stop, and it was just, man, just so much information in there. Like I was saying earlier, you were going over all of the usual suspects and more. You mentioned Franz Packard, who doesn't come up a lot. You mentioned Ian Taylor, who doesn't come up a lot. The specific books, you know, Wells, The Shape of Things to Come was one. And you mentioned how he had an entire staff of writers. I don't want to get off. I mean, my goodness, we could go on. You could go on for weeks, I'm sure, on all of this stuff. But
it's endless. The histories are endless because you realize that there's been lots of worker bees, I call them, the big technocrats, running around the world, teaching at universities, giving lectures to governments and so on, for centuries, in fact. And they all work for a secretive organization that really does guide the world. It gives us the cultures. It changes the cultures, always for their own progress, as I say, the direction they want us to go in. But the public are never aware that they're not free at all. They're very happy slaves. They do accept today that their Big Brother has a nice face. He can't be all that bad. And that's why they'll deny the evidence when you present it to them. They've been taught to be egocentric, so they'll avoid the pain of unpleasantness, and they'll seek pleasure. Because if you accept the truth, you have to make decisions in your own personal life, and then you have to act on them. And they're not used to making these kinds of decisions. So they decide to live in denial, even when they're starting to suffer from the effects of those things that are happening around them. So as I say, these sciences have always been perfectly understood. And anyone who wants to know how well understood, just look at Machiavelli and read The Prince. It's an excellent handbook on how to rule whole societies. Look at the books written for the kings or royalty by Francis Bacon, because he actually wrote some books there that were like resumes for someone who wants to be an advisor to kings. And he said the same thing. It's best that the public never know the real reasons of laws and regulations that are set upon them. He said because they might rebel. So that he was teaching the ways to give false perceptions to the public back in his own lifetime, hundreds of years ago. This has never changed, never ever changed. And it's worse today because they have had centuries of using the behaviors. Now it's the behavioral sciences, and we are very predictable now. They know how to work on the mass culture very easily. They have the tools, and they have the educational system as well, which starts it all off. So we're in bad shape. But at the top, as I say, going back to Bacon's time, the Rosicrucians were in full bloom. And then we find out in the 1700s, Freemasonry was born, basically, as it is today, using some of the Rosicrucian traditions, but not the higher secrets. That's reserved for noble nobility or noble orders.
Kind of a hybrid term of yours, you'd call that, I think it was 1717, you would call that like the Masonry 2.0, so to speak, right?
Yes. what they do, you see, they fashioned it after the Catholic Church in many ways. And they used the Jesuit system, but they also used the system of monks and monasteries. One monastery could spawn off another sect that was a specialized sect in an area, And this is what they did from their main society back in the 1500s, the Rosicrucians. They then gave birth to other specialized departments, all working like a cluster around them towards the same end in their own areas. And it's massive today. It's the same type of organization today. It's a pyramid with a capstone, and all the building blocks that hold it up are all the worker NGOs and foundations that hold it up. At the bottom, of course, you'll see the sparse grass here and there, and that's the wasteland. That means the general public. That's the population of the world, those in the darkness or the profane. That's how the world is run. And that logo, basically, is on the badge of MI5. People can look it up for themselves. You'll see the pyramid there, too. So that's how the structure really is. And people don't realize, too, that democracy has never been a stable thing. It's never had a fixed definition. It keeps altering. In the 1700s, right up into the 20th century, World War I in Britain, you had to own land and or be a landlord in order to vote. The people in Britain didn't get that vote if they rented. And 90-odd percent of the public in Britain at that time rented. So it was the country was run by a few. So when they had to give democracy or the idea of participation and representation to the general public, they simply went around it with the parallel government that really runs the show. It puts its own people in at the top and all sides, all parties. Carol Quigley talked about that. And they can't lose control. Margaret Thatcher's come out openly and talked about the parallel governments that she belonged to, and all ex-prime ministers and presidents belong to. They all know each other, and they all have the same agenda in mind. There's no differentiation, really, about where they're going and why they want to bring us there. So they have an old plan of elitists who use lots of these worker bees who are kept in a high lifestyle, lots of prominence, and people bow to them. But their goal is to come through into a new world order where all the lesser type, the common people, will be eradicated because we're old, we're obsolete, literally obsolete, genetically and so on, and we have not bred selectively. We've not had our mates picked for us, and therefore we must be culled off because within our gene pool, there's always a chance of a revolutionary coming up and upsetting the apple cart. That's what they say in their own writings. And we find with the Cold Harbor system that was set up on eugenics in the United States, that's the conclusion that they came out with, Cavendish and others came out with. They said that they couldn't trust the population, even if you had a good offspring that worked for them, but because he was trained that way, his offspring might be more primitive and go off in a different direction. Therefore, that gene pool had to be eradicated. Now they're talking about the whole population of the planet, except the select few that will serve them. And through genetics, they really, really do believe they can create, and I do believe they can too, mind you, they're way beyond what they tell the public. They can create a new human species to serve them better than we do.
I completely agree, and you point out all the time. I mean, for example, Bertrand Russell back in 1953, and the impact of science on society. I mean, he wrote, and how weird these words must, you know, start to sound in today's revealed scientific climate. You know, he said, among other very disturbing things, that gradually by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they become almost different species.
Yes.
And he said a revolt of the plebes would become as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton.
That is correct. And then when you go into even deeper studies, it becomes more horrific because it dawns in you, sometimes gradually, sometimes very quickly, that especially reading books from Arthur Koestler. Now, Koestler and Russell and others of that era all worked, and I have the books now on it, the declassified information. They all worked for MI5,
mm-hmm.
and which works on behalf of the Crown, not the British government, but the Crown of England.
Right, and you can see that, like you said, in all their logos, GC, HQ, MI5, MI6,
yes,
et cetera, et cetera.
And so here you have an organization that people think is their countries, but it's not. It's the queens or the royal families, the same royal families, mind you, that have tremendous links with Germany and Prussia. And Prince Philip, for instance, was over at the graves of some of his old ex-Nazi SS partners and relatives. That's been the British newspapers, and that's what's at the head of Britain. You know, so you got to start asking these questions. Who runs the show? Who are these people really? How long is their history? And we can go back through centuries before they even moved into Britain. And we find in Venice, and we find the black nobility and so on, they were incredibly rich people even back then. They ran the commerce of the world in those eras, and they've come up through time, always having their partners selected for them. The inbreeding of psychopathy is definitely a trait with them. They don't have normal human emotion or empathy for other type of people outside of their own class, and very often not for their own children even. You'll notice that the boarding school system originated in Germany and in England for the wealthier classes, and it was traditional for people in royalty to have nursing nannies for their children. They didn't even see their children often. As soon as a child was old enough, they're sent off to boarding school.
So once again, we're running into a break, and unfortunately we got to stop there. Stick around. We'll be right back on the other side of the short break with my guest, Alan Watt. Welcome back to Road Warrior Radio with my guest, Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix on the Republic Broadcasting Network. 3 evenings a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 7 to 8 Central. You can grab the show on the archives if you don't catch them live, and it's an amazing show. Hopefully you can tell, if you haven't heard him before, and I'd be surprised if you're listening to this show if you haven't, that he can traverse the expanse of recorded history in light, you know, like tripping the light fandango, so to speak. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely marvelous, and I don't know about you, the listening audience, but I'm hanging on every word, and we actually have a caller on the line, Melinda in Pennsylvania. I want to take her call before we move on, because I know that you could go on for as long as we could possibly give you. Melinda, thanks for staying up late. And
no problem.
Welcome.
I'm a night owl, and I listen to you. And, Alan, I just want to tell you that I've been listening to you for the last couple of months, and you make my brain hurt, and it should be hurting. I mean, it really, there's so much information there, and I fall down the rabbit hole, and I you make me stay down there for a while. And
yes.
I don't remember hearing anyone that made me think so much, and I just want to thank you. And I know that on your program that you have mentioned that some people have taken advantage of you, and I just want to let you know that there are those of us who are taking advantage of every word that you have to share and passing it on.
That's what it's there for, yeah.
And I want to tell you, you were just starting to address something that I've been thinking about a lot, and that is these individuals, these elitists who are running the world, they're obviously without conscience, and is it through intermarrying that has bred it out of them? I know that you said that they don't live a life like us at all, and they're puppets, including our political leaders. Do they program them? Because how can these political candidates and other people who are helping to, or so-called the people who are running our country, and knowing what's happening behind the scenes, how can they live with themselves, and how can they hoodwink us?
Psychopaths can be born in any generation from any family. However, it's like Plato said, certain traits can be bred in or out by selective breeding. And we find that the powerful families, even in ancient times, generally won their power by slaughtering other people. So they already had the psychopathic traits. Some of them were more cunning than others. Those are the ones who eventually matched up with the daughters of other psychopaths. And so technically you have an ongoing race of people who are psychopathic, passing that on to their children, and even showing it in the fact that they do separate the children often very young into special schools. The Egyptians, for instance, the ancient Egyptians used to send their sons out to another lord that would be related to them, and they would become basically the squire to that lord. That was standard. And that's exactly the same system that was used by the Normans, and I think there's a connection all down through history. They all like to use the falcons for hunting. You see that in the frescoes. They're the same MOs of the fox hunt and so on. So we're looking at very, very old families with their own particular culture at the very top. However, they can also recruit the lower type psychopaths, lower level psychopaths in to work for them. And they have no problem with that, because psychopaths, by nature, seek power over others. And they gravitate towards politics like a magnet. Their ego is incredibly huge. In fact, a psychopath's ego, they say they're ego-centric. The world revolves around them. And that's why they gravitate into politics, and that's why nothing that's disclosed about their past ever fazes them. They never blush.
I guess we lost Melinda, and thank you for your call, Melinda. And, you know, before we jump off, and I don't know if you want to get back to the Gorbachev point that I interrupted you on to begin with, but I was just going to say, the evolution, the birth control, and the population growth, the eugenics, that keeps coming up, has come up a couple of times. I was going to say one of my favorite ways to explain evolution and the reasoning and the mindset behind it and why it's foisted upon us so much these days, I think a lot was shaped out of the information that you've put out. And I usually say where Malthus left off, Francis Galton, half cousin of Charles Darwin, picked up right where Malthus left off. And basically, when he read his cousin Darwin's Origin of Species, he said, "Well, this is great. This frees us from a theological argument that life is precious, and now we can say you're biologically inferior, therefore you must die." Yep. And at the same time, with the inbreeding that they were practicing, actually believe that, you know, this concept of evolution is true and that it's real and that they're getting, you know, better hereditarily over generations.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They need an excuse to... In fact, you see, it's not enough to have an idea or a belief system at the top for their own class. You have to train your subjects to also believe it in order to have their compliance. So we always comply with their wishes, and they have reduced us to a state where it's non-religious. Religion was always in the way for them, because it elevated man and every man and woman up into a sacred status. So that was a big nuisance down through the centuries to them. So now they've trained us. No, we're just another biological species. We're protoplasm and neurons, and your thoughts are just little sparks between the nerve endings and the dendrites and so on. And once you believe that you're just another animal, you've just given up your right to stand up and say, "You can't touch me. I'm a sovereign, sacred being." We've lost that right. We've given it up. So we have voluntarily complied, because we've been conditioned to be basically atheistic in our thinking and to believe that the scientists are the new gods. Therefore, whatever they say must be true, and we must obey them. And this is the worst tyranny of any religion that's ever existed on the planet. It's a scientific tyranny, the same one that H.G. Wells worked with and also warned us about, because he realized he wasn't quite sure on the right outcome of all of this, even though he worked towards it himself.
Yeah, and, you know, it's absolutely, I mean, it's shocking and mind-boggling when you find out and you realize or are exposed to the fact that they wrote about that too. You know, the fact that the way that language is smithed, and like I keep telling people, because it was you that said, the way that you expressed it again, you know, the way that you expressed it, I didn't hear anybody else express it the way that you did. this language, like Orwell wrote about, you know, the way they've manipulated it through the centuries and millennia, but, you know, most recently brought down descriptive and creative language and thought to a point that a person can't communicate danger to his neighbor because of the plus and minus or the one and zero. I try to send, but I don't do a good job of doing that, and the receiver can't receive it, so.
That's what's happened. They understand the science of communication and verbal and visual communication. They understand all of these sciences. They're slightly different from each other, so they can use visual on television and give you writing beneath it, so you're thinking two different levels at the same time, and you're easily programmed that way. But it's called psycholinguistics, the use of how words are strung together in specific sentences, and with the use of repetition at least 8 times, and all the big marketing companies understand this. You have to hear it 8 times before the average person will automatically spout that same sentence themselves without ever really reasoning it out to see if it should be their opinion. They just use the slogan. Lenin said, "We shall win the war for the world by the use of slogans." And they use psycholinguistics all the time. Weapons of mass destruction over and over. These kind of terms are used. And they're all, when you see 10 men across the world coming out with the same brand new term or phrase, then you know it's an organization is running the whole show.
When you see a guy who supposedly is the most evil terrorist in the entire world show up on your own soil and give a talk at Columbia University for the visa that was granted by the guy that called him the most evil terrorist in the world, that should draw questions in most people's minds without running away, though. And if people hear me chuckling, it's not because I think it's funny. It's because I'm so shocked and astonished that this is actually happening. I mean, the truth really is stranger than fiction. But
And it did come out. I mean, at the Rees Commission, when Senator Dodd was sent out to the foundations just to find out why they seem to be supporting communist front groups with heavy funding, then he was so shocked when the CEO of the Ford Corporation or Foundation came out and told them. He said, "Well, our job is to help blend the culture and society and the educational system of the Soviet system with that of America, so they can be blended together seamlessly." When you couple that with Gorbachev being brought over, an ex-KGB leader, an ex-president eventually of the Soviet Union, given the Presidio and given his license to operate this charitable foundation while he was still the president of the Soviet Union, that was already signed in California, then you know there's a bigger world agenda going on here. And this was after, of course, Margaret Thatcher had brought this new reformed communist over to the West with the $6,000 suit and so on, very trendy communist, and that's how the media were told to portray him and his wife, and the media admitted that they didn't ask any political questions about Russia during the whole visit because they were requested not to by the Royal Institute of International Affairs. They all complied quite happily. Then they did a poll survey on U.S. citizens afterwards once they came over here, and they said, "What do you think of this new trendy president? Would you vote for this man?" 70% of the people said, "Yeah."
Unbelievable.
Yeah. They would vote him in as the president of the U.S. at that time because the media had done such a great PR job on him.
I remember that quote. And, you know, speaking of that, my wife asked me a rhetorical question, and again, you know, I made the statement, and it sounds like hyperbole, but it really probably isn't. It's probably more true than, it's probably, I guess, funny because it's true. She was asking me the other day, kind of lamenting the whole election process and the debacle and everything that's, you know, the whole fraud that it is, really, and asked a rhetorical question, and I said, you know, I honestly believe this, I really do, that if even with the banter between the supposed, you know, two-party system that we have, if the Communist Party candidate were to be elected by a landslide, supposedly 95% of the popular vote went to this Communist Party candidate nobody had heard of, I think most of America would respond by saying, Well, I don't know. I don't know who he is, but somebody must have liked him. Maybe a lot of folks in the Midwest liked him. So, I don't know. Maybe he's good. Let's give him a try.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Again, Huxley said, you'll know what the people want because it's what everyone else wants. That's right. how they decide. What's everyone else doing? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's why opinion polls were thought up, the whole idea of them, by Tavistock as well. Because they found out that if they put out polls saying anything that they wanted to say and claiming this percentage were for this and so much for that, the public would believe them and they'd go with what seemed to be the majority opinion. That's how simple it is.
And which is why, you know, when McCain was asked earlier this year, I forget where he was overseas when he was interviewed, and asked specifically, you know, the fact that his position on most matters of state was different than 70% of the American people, he said it doesn't matter. He didn't care. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he's probably right. It doesn't matter. Before we run away, I don't know if you want to get back to the point in response to Melinda's call about the psychopaths and that they never blush. It's amazing, you know, when you see these people, if anybody ever really stops and thinks about what's going on, like the congressional committee hearings, even though we know that the fox is always in the hen house, the game is always rigged, even so, you know, if you or I, for example, were to show up before a congressional oversight committee hearing, mm-hmm. supposedly on trial, even though it was a mock trial and we knew it was rigged, I would blush. I would be a little, you know, shocked. But like you said, they never blush.
No.
And the hubris of these people is just, I mean, it is sociopathic.
It is. The psychopath will immediately defend their ego. It doesn't matter if they're caught in the act of doing something. They'll deny it or rationalize the most irrational things away to suit their own ego first and foremost. And when the skeletons are brought out of the closet during election time, it doesn't faze them in the least. Even when they're in power, like Bill Clinton coming on national television, looking right at the camera saying, I did not have sex with that woman. These characters have no shame. Psychopaths are incapable of feeling shame. Incapable. It's not in their makeup. It's absent completely. And it's the greatest cover they have, because the average person can only judge people by their own emotional standards. It's hard for them to realize these people don't have those emotional standards that are ruling over you.
Yeah, it's you know, and speaking of that, you know, the doublespeak, it's intriguing to me that when you listen to what they're saying, a lot of times, you know, one of the things I pointed out, for example, on recent shows is that you'll hear one of the sound bites, the rhetoric that goes around now is not the, when we hear about the economic collapse, it's not the collapse of markets, it's not the collapse of economy or any of that. It's, they say it specifically as a collapse of confidence. Everyone's saying collapse of confidence. And
yep.
People, if they just would understand, as one person said, you know, what if they decided to throw a collapse and no one showed up? I mean, it's that simple.
That's right.
But
when your president gets on national television and tells you basically to panic, then the people will panic, because that's what they want everyone. It's like 9/11. We had to believe that the whole world was at risk of a caveman somewhere.
Yeah.
And the hype they went to make us all believe that, it's the same hype they're using to get this off, this whole economic crisis on the go, to make us all stampede, so they can guide us into the new system. And it is a new system that's going to come out of this. They've already set up the machinery to put the World Bank at the top of all this, managing all the finances of the world. That was always the intention of the World Bank and the United Nations. It was set up to eventually become the front organization for the elite under the guise of our nice new daddy. Who cares about us? And so that's what's coming out of it. And out of these bailouts, it isn't just national bailouts that you have to deal with. Under the Treaty for the Americas and the Summit of the Americas and the amalgamation, this Peace and Prosperity Partnership, what it means really is once they have a totalitarian regime within the Americas, they'll have peace at the top. They won't have to worry about us, and they certainly will prosper at the top. We'll all be slaves. But also, yeah. we have to bail out European banks as well if they go under. So, in other words, we're all in it together. That's their big slogan. And that's what they always wanted us to come to. But they're going to bring a new monetary system out of this eventually. I don't know when. John Maynard Keynes talked about it. He says it will be a new system not based on the old profit-type system or the hoarding of money. It will be the world of servitude. And only by panicking and terrifying the public across the world, giving them tremendous hardship, would we be ready to accept it.
I completely agree. You know, you mentioned the bailing out of foreign interests, and that's a multifaceted issue, but that's why I keep saying the bailout bill turns the United States into a giant economic landfill. Mm-hmm. And getting back to the doublespeak, like you're pointing out, when they say we, like I tell people this all the time, when they say we, they're not talking about you or I.
That's right.
But we assume that.
It's funny because you see, the password of Rosicrucians in the Queen Elizabeth the First Court was the old Latin term. It was in Greek, actually. It was from nous, N-O-U-S. You transpose that into French, and it was U-S. And that's the term that they always use. You're either with us, U-S, or you're with the terrorists. So they have all these little Masonic jokes amongst themselves, and the public have no idea what's actually being said.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. I wouldn't mind giving a shameless plug, you know, it's really not shameless, but, you know, for your books, for example, you know, the Cutting Through volumes,
yes.
and that's
mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got three books on my website, cuttingthroughmatrix.com, and I do the Cutting Through series 1, 2, and 3, which goes through some of the psycholinguistics and even terms or even the sciences of this going back for a few hundred years and how they brought it all into the English language. We don't realize even that the language itself is updated and upgraded every so often by those who control our minds. And they put it to full use as well. Once you understand how they speak, what they're saying, and the coding they use, you get a completely different picture, and everything becomes understandable.
Interesting. Well, I have a question, and I know that we got about 60 seconds left in this segment, and then a short segment on the other side. My question, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are for the next segment. And this should, I don't know, probably leave folks hanging. It'll leave me hanging. But my question is, do you think, in your opinion, is Putin a wild card or is he controlled opposition? Because he's, I mean, for example, I heard John Hagee say this morning, you know, he's harping on the whole, you know, I mean, he's basically doing his rhetorical soundbite job, but he's talking about how Russia attacked Georgia. Putin is one of few people that chronologed what really happened appropriately. So when we come back from the break, hopefully you share some thoughts on that. Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix, and I unfairly asked a question with a short amount of time left, and so I don't know. Hopefully maybe that'll be a setup and we can do this again sometime. But what are your thoughts on the Putin factor, I suppose, if we want to call it that?
Yes, well, Putin, I always say he was put in there by design. But Putin, if necessary, he'll play the bad guy. If they need an enemy, if we won't get to our knees and give everything up as they hope we will, they'll have to get another enemy very quickly to scare us to death and bring us to our knees till we do pray that they give us an answer to it all, and they'll be only too glad to do so. However, they're allowed a certain amount of competition, even at Putin's level. Same with politicians below presidents and prime ministers. They're allowed a certain amount of competition. It's only necessary you own the ones at the top. That's what Carl Quigley said. Now, Georgia is a very unique place. That was a special place set aside by Lenin for certain people for helping in the Bolshevik Revolution. And that was one of their main areas for scientific research in different areas. They set up under Stalin 10 super cities, very advanced. You'll never see them on a map. However, another one, the 11th one, was the one that is on the map, and that is Georgia. In Georgia, they basically had phagocytes from 1917. They didn't need antibiotics. They could literally alter viruses to destroy any other virus or bacterium, any disease, from 1917 onwards. And the West was only told about this on a documentary from the CBC Canada about 4 years ago. And it's called Phagocytes. Very interesting movie to see if you can get it from CBC. Now it's been suppressed again, that information. But they could literally kill anything, including gangrene, with it. That's how far ahead the sciences at the top really, really are. Georgia was a mainstay for this, but Georgia has a special tie with Israel, we found out, because the Israeli troops had signed a deal with them. They trained the troops, they armed the troops, and it's all to do with who gets first grabs at the pipelines that are coming through there. So at that level, they are allowed a certain amount of competition amongst themselves, a sort of jousting match, you might say, like knights do, to take the booty, the rewards. And that's really what Georgia was about. And more will come out of this as time goes on, and the reporters are allowed to say a little bit more about it. When we don't really care anymore, that's when they tell us what really happened. So, yeah. So Georgia, definitely in the scientific research field, was way ahead, light years ahead of the West with its antibiotics and different things too. If you can create viruses to eat other viruses, that meant you could literally program viruses in 1917 to kill people as well.
And, you know, and then, of course, coincidentally, we wound up with the Spanish flu in 1917. Imagine that.
Yes, we did. And I'm certain that's why, because I've gone into the... If you see Phagocytes, CBC Canada, you'll see, you get the history of that, how a guy came from Canada to the Soviet Union and set up this factory, and they were curing diseases from then on with a whiff from a little spray you just sprayed into the person's mouth. It would kill off the bacterium or the virus that it was designed specifically to kill.
Unbelievable. Folks, you've been listening to Alan Watt, host of Cutting Through the Matrix. That's it. We'll take care. We'll catch you on the other side.